Welcome to the Dan and Jay's Comedy Hour podcast, where our catchphrase is, I must not fear, fear is the mind killer. Fear is a little death that brings us to total obliteration. I will face my fear. I will permit it to pass through me and over me. And when it has gone past, I will turn to the inner eye to see its path. Where fear has gone, there will be nothing. Only I will remain. And I am a comedian.
I don't remember that as our thing.
We said it every episode.
Wow, why don't I remember this?
I don't know.
Oh, I'm sorry. You can't see me. What's happening? Mm-hmm. My camera's not on.
You gotta fix that.
There we go.
There it is. Okay.
So, I'm trying to get my webcam updated. So in the meantime, while we don't typically make this a video episode, who knows, maybe. But for the sake of my friends here, my co-host Dan, and mm-hmm. our delightful guest Chris Morgan, who's coming back after an aborted attempt at a podcast.
That's illegal, man.
Just to make that clear, at a podcast.
It's within 6 weeks, so it's allowed.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay, that's fair. But my Animal Crossing person is here. He's wearing all Nook Inc. clothing, including an eye mask, which I forgot the eye mask was on, which is pretty funny. I wanted to make him, Dan, a level 7 susceptible, as Dean Pelton was in Community. I wanted him to have all
nice.
The Nook stuff.
And also, I don't know if you see, but he's got a teardrop tattoo.
Yeah, he does have a teardrop tattoo.
I was wondering if it was a tattoo or if he was, you know, weeping because the mask was either too hot or too cold. Because it seems like it's one of those masks that could be, like, you know, on the hot end or the cold end. Like, you know,
that's true. It could be one of those.
Yeah. Didn't think
throw
about
it in
that.
The mic, yeah.
There, that's a good angle. Look at that. That's
there
fun.
You go.
There we go. But he's got a microphone and everything. So now my Animal Crossing guy's here until and if. We'll see. Anyway, Chris, thank you for coming back. As we did last time, I would like you to upfront tell people about your book. You're a local author, such as myself. There are not a ton of us. And I will tell you, I won't say this person's name, but I am friends with a few other authors local. And this other author, again, won't say their name, but they're like, I was like, should we start like an author group or something? And they're like, yeah, we could, but like every other author is just writing memoirs about like their parents. And like, that seems to be everybody else. I'm like, oh yeah, well, I think she'll be delighted to know that there's another pop culture author in the area. Tell us about your book, if you would please, and where we can find it.
Yeah, I'm friends with the corpse of Elmore Leonard. So I got one local writer friend as I go hang out with his, you know, who is that? Yeah, I think it was it Lionel Barrymore? Some story that one of the old school Barrymores of the Barrymore family fame, presaging one Drew Barrymore, that his friends dug up his corpse for like a party after he was dead. And of course, like a lot of old Hollywood stories, what degree of it is accurate and what degree of actual corpse robbery there was, I don't know. But I don't know what Elmore Leonard is what I'm saying. And as to what I'm doing with my book, which is little, if anything, to do with the stealing of corpses. I write about pop culture, and my third book on that broad subject, though all my books have been about 90s television in the realm of pop culture, and this one is called 99 Episodes That Defined the 90s, TV Milestones from Arsenio to Homer to yada, yada, yada. And as the, you know, title would indicate, it has 99 different TV episodes within its confines. Friendly confines, not like Wrigley Field, but in book form. And running the gamut from all kinds of shows, from classics to not-so-classics. And not every episode is chosen, these 99 different shows, to try to capture some aspect of the 90s culturally in the realm of television or the realm of sometimes like it reflects politics or reflects movies and reflects all sorts of things. It reflects Dan Quayle's existence and all sorts of things can be found within the book 99 Episodes That Defined the 90s, coming to you in 2024.
And when we last did this episode, I will not repeat what I did, but I will say that I did give you shit about having no news radio episodes in it, which is fine. It is absolutely fine, because to be fair, it didn't have the same outsized influence that a Friends or a Seinfeld had. I understand that. But I will just say nothing. I'll say nothing. I told you I would say nothing, because we're making this up to you. Well, it's been a
bit. Although, to be fair, yes. I did cry a little bit about the lack of perfect strangers.
Yeah, that's true. That is also true. No perfect strangers.
I should have a tear, too.
Sometimes the world looks perfect, Dan. You know,
I can't wait till they remake that as like a gritty realism.
Me, too.
Can they do with Fresh Prince?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
But can we just bring them back? Because they're both doing great. They're both fantastic.
Yeah, and he's going to be in that new Beverly Hills Cop movie, Bronson Pinchot. At least he's in the trailer, so he's probably got an A scene in the movie at the very least.
I cannot wait. I hope that makes up for what Beverly Hills Cop 3 was.
Was a John Landis film?
Yeah. Boy, oh boy. Oh, you know, I don't think I've ever talked about this on here because why would I? But, you know, I am a sometimes screenwriter, not a paid screenwriter, but I like to write movies. And one that I started and never finished, and it's impossible to do now, so I can talk about it. I always wanted Beverly Hills Cop 4 to be Die Hard 6 as well. So I just wanted them to just come together, get all of our little side characters together, get out one final job, kill John McClane, probably. Don't kill Axel Foley. He's too cool. But John McClane at some point has to die. But obviously he's since retired due to medical issues. But that's what I always wanted. That's the movie I wanted to see. Those two combined.
Yeah. Beverly Hills Cop 4, Die Hard 6, maybe Lettered Part 7, speaking of movies that
can't be happening. Yeah, why not? Yeah, let's bring... why not Bill Cosby? That sounds fine.
If we got to kill somebody in a film, I mean, maybe we can make it a snuff film. little extrajudicial killing. Get John Landis back involved. He knows how to kill somebody on a movie set.
He certainly does. Bring in the chopper, okay? Oh, my... Sorry, very quickly, just looking out the window. Today has been insane. Today, the temperatures have fluxed. It's been sunny. And then every other minute, it's like, it looks like a blizzard's about to happen. And it's blizzard style right now, at least. I don't know how far away we live from one another, Chris.
I just looked outside, and it's definitely dark and ominous because I'm in the regional area of the Detroit metropolitan realm known as Ferndale.
Okay.
So, you know, I'm adjacent to the city of Detroit. And yeah, I just turned around and said that because I was like, oh yeah, because the weather today, it was definitely windy. And I was outside for a minute, and it's like, yeah, it was cold and it was windy, but then it was sunny. I'm like, all right. And yeah, now it's like dark, but I'm like, what realm of dark is it? Because, you know, with the we're only at recording to very much pinpoint the date when this is recording. Within the general vicinity of the daylight savings time feeling recent.
Yeah.
And so it's like, I'm still getting, you know, my bearings in terms of like, okay, when's the sun setting now? And like, figuring that all out and everything, you know?
I will say, so since we tried to do an episode and didn't, Dan and I have done our 10th anniversary podcast episode, which is to say the 10th anniversary of this podcast. So for anybody listening, we've been doing comedy together now for 31 years or more, technically.
Technically.
But 10 years of this fucking stupid podcast. We've been doing it longer than Seth Meyers has been doing his show. What else just celebrated a 10-year thing that is way more famous and important than our show? I don't remember, but it's happening a lot. A lot of shows happened in 2014.
Today is my 12th wedding anniversary.
Oh, yeah. Look at that. Forgot about that. I was the officiant at said wedding.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember what I said. Hopefully it was somewhat sincere. I'm trying to remember. Hopefully I said some sincere stuff. Did I, Dan?
You said some sincere stuff.
Okay,
your puppet.
Oh, that's right. I did bring a puppet. Was that my idea, though, or was that
No, I think Ari asked for him to be
there. Okay, thank God. Okay, because I'm like, that does not... I don't feel like I would push that. I don't feel like I would bring the puppet with me unless someone asked.
We did the nearly wed game.
Yes, we did the nearly wed game.
We officiated with Jason Hum, and we walked up to you to the Imperial March.
Yes, that's right. That's right. That was a good time. That was fun. Did that back in... Wait, where did you live? Was that technically North Hollywood? Like just on the edge? Or no, Sherman Oaks. You guys lived in Sherman Oaks.
It was Sherman Oaks at that time.
Yeah.
I used to live Sherman Oaks adjacent as well in Valley Glen.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Wait, how long were you in L.A. for?
And about somewhere between 5 and 6 years, by which I mean probably about 5.5 years. You know, I didn't go leave on an anniversary, so it was somewhere in that mix and, you know... spending time up in various areas of the valley and then moseying on down to Echo Park for the last little bit I was there. But yeah, at one point I was in the little it's small area known as Valley Glen, which I think was Sherman Oaks adjacent.
Think so.
I went to that Target that was in like a was that Sherman Oaks or that North Hollywood? Anyways, that was in that general vicinity over there for a little while.
Acting work, TV work, comedy work, bit of
I
anything?
was out there. I went out there to try and do some writing stuff in the realm of television, and would always do just well enough and get enough little bit of like either what's the encouragement. It took me a second to think word encouragement, which is probably not in and of itself
That's not a great
encouraging,
sign.
but just to get like a little bit of work here or there'd be an opportunity here or I'd win some like fellowship to some writing thing there. But, well, I'm making progress here. I'm not like getting the gig on a sitcom or what have you, but stuff's happening. And a guy who wrote on Toy Story 2 said I was a good writer, so I was like, all right,
All
I'll
right.
stick around for a little more. And then eventually it was just like one, LA was heading swiftly, ever swiftly towards its rental crisis, and two, just like, well, I'm just getting more writing work. Not related to like anything involving like television or anything where I need to be in LA. And it's like, well, I also enjoy doing this. And if I live, almost anywhere else, it'll be a much lower cost of living. So I
Yeah.
just nixed it on the old LA thing and then started writing stuff for Funny or Die after that, after I left LA. So it's like, well, I guess I really didn't need to be doing this stuff in Los Angeles and, paying exorbitant prices to rent a bedroom and a bathroom in a house, which is supposed to be a private bathroom, but then the landlord who's also lives in the house lets his friends use it.
Oh,
And
no.
so it's like, I guess maybe it's not so private after all. But yeah, so that's Los Angeles for you. If I could sum it up, it'd be sometimes strangers use your supposedly private bathroom and grown adults urinate all over the toilet seat and do not clean it up. And you say, do I feel comfortable going into this room of mostly strangers and saying, well, whoever left my toilet seat soiled, please clean it up because it's really disconcerting that you did that. And I don't think I should have to clean it up.
That's
So
fair.
stop watching this movie that is also being watched at needlessly high volume. And classic roommate stuff, only that this guy was in his probably late 60s, early 70s, and so would all his friends. So it's slightly different than the usual because I was like, I lived with my age contemporaries, so I was like, I know what I'll try. I'll rent like a bedroom from the house with some older guy, and he'll just, it'll be like a chill situation. And then it very much was not, because when they watch movies, they watch them very loud. And maybe he didn't tell you that he was sort of had a gig doing like Dean Martin style crooning, and he needed to practice a couple days a week,
Oh,
and you have to
geez,
deal with that
amazing.
while you're working. So
Oh,
yeah, so that was
sure.
Los Angeles. And
That
if you're
is
wondering, if you're
basically
thinking
Los
about moving
Angeles
out
to a
there,
T.
that
That
is a
is.
universal experience, so just expect that. What I
Yep.
experienced, what everybody experiences, because solipsism is its own reward.
I was there for 18 years and I didn't once write on a thing that wasn't mine or act in too many things that weren't mine. To be fair though, I didn't like the one thing people told me when I came out there was just like, yeah, you gotta concentrate on just one thing. You gotta just focus on, if you're gonna be a writer, be a writer. And they were probably right, but I am impatient. Ask Dan. Dan's seen it on a regular basis. So for a couple years now. Yeah. Let's see. So, Dan, I don't know if anything new has happened since we last spoke on the podcast, but what's up, Dan Bill Miller?
I saw Dune this morning, which is why I read that.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay. I see. That's what that's from.
That's what that's
And
from.
what did you think of the new Dune?
I liked it. All the people who think, like, kind of see the main character as, like they call him out as being, what's the term? I
A
just was
sand
about to
twink.
say. He is that, but no, White Savior. Like that movie is making him anything but. If you don't see him as a villain at the end, you don't you're fight clubbing that movie.
I haven't seen it, but my understanding of the book through cultural, working osmosis knowledge is that's kind of the point of it is that he's like,
it's 100% that. But they make it more overt than the book.
Okay, I see. I see.
Like, they just straight up, they basically have a character who is like calling him out on it every step of the way, mm-hmm. basically. And if you don't pick up on it, what? You're oblivious, dude.
In the first movie, because of the first movie, I don't like Dune, so I can't get into it. But maybe I could give this one a shot. I also don't particularly care for Timothée Chalamet. He creeps me out. There's something about his little, like, I'm trying to be Gene Wilder light in this Wonka thing, looks so awful. How can I take him seriously as Paul Atreides?
I'm not a big fan of anything I've seen about Wonka.
Yeah.
I don't feel like he has the right delivery or energy.
No, he looks like he's faking something that he doesn't understand, which is, I think, comedy. I do not think he can do comedy. And at the same time, from what I understand, fucking Willy Wonka in this is like a fun, like carefree, like loves joy kind of guy. Like, are we supposed to assume that he becomes this damaged sociopath between this and the other movie? Because he's insane. He's an insane person in that movie. I don't care how nice he is to Charlie at the end of it. He's insane and wants children to die.
I could kind of get there, though.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he starts out very...
Sure.
Bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, and then he sees the world.
Okay, well then can the next one be him getting damaged? Because I'll co-sign.
I feel like you would need that. You need that middle movie of what crushes him.
And
that makes him lie with a Slugsworth and uh-huh. you know, have to kill children to find his heir.
Yeah. Somebody else would have to direct it, though, because that dude's like the Paddington dude, and that dude doesn't really do like dark or whatever.
No.
He just does like everything is
Let's get Peter Molyneux doing that one, too.
Yeah, there we go.
Okay. It's awfully hard.
Uh-huh.
Just to watch Dune and not see some parallels to some real world events that are occurring.
Oh, interesting. Interesting.
Especially because the Fremen are definitely based on a certain culture.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And on top of that, I did some research to learn more about Peter Molyneux.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually tried to make an animated version of this story about what happened to the Palestinians.
Oh, okay.
Based off of a Palestinian book that was written.
Interesting.
And it never got made, and I wonder why.
Interesting.
So I feel like this is not an accident.
Sure, 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 sure. I'd be curious. So, like, the publisher of my last book also just published, at the same time, published a book that was a little bit more focused than mine. Wasn't about 50 different shows in the 90s, but was indeed about a single movie, which was Dune, the original Dune, Lynch's Dune. Mm-hmm. And boy, oh boy, can I tell you, there's enough media out there and enough interest in Dune still, and because of these new movies, that he's getting all the press in the world. And I'm like, fuck, I should have just written about Grease 2 or some shit. Just one thing. Pick one thing I really love. Nobody's going to read a Grease 2 book. I have pitched it. Nobody's going to read it.
If you can find a good hook, find something to really, like...
To do a hook, or you have to do the oral history thing, which is like the shortcut to having an idea. You know, if you don't have an idea why you want to write about a thing, you just do an oral history. Not to knock the oral historians out there, some of them do a very good job.
Yeah,
it just is if you don't have like some like meat on the bone or like a thesis statement, you can always throw an oral history into the mix, because that sort of is the organizing principle in and of itself.
Yeah,
Can we popularize the term anal history? When you read a book and you go, this guy is just talking out his ass.
Yeah, yeah. That could have been my book. I'm not sure yet. Well, history, time will tell. Yeah, it's funny because like every oral history I had to read through, to write my book, it gets so boring for me. Maybe if I was more into the subject matter, I love sketch comedy, but if I was more into one particular show, the oral history thing would work. But same thing. I don't want to insult the oral historians, but it feels lazy to me. I'm not saying it is. For me, it would be lazy. It would be lazy for me to do that. So I did like 150 interviews. I had a rough thesis statement, and thank God, most of these interviews helped that thesis play out, and it turns out I was kind of on the money there. But I have since pitched other history, pop culture history books that I'm trying to sell. And one guy was even like, yeah, you could even go the oral history route. Now you don't even have to write the thing. And I'm like, I want to write a book here.
Yeah.
What? Mm-hmm. Like one publisher was like, yeah, I'll publish your book. You can just do an oral history. And I'm like, I don't want to do that. I really don't. Not for the thing.
Because then you got to interview people, which is my least favorite thing to do. Which is why I just write like what my sort of writing is more in the vein of like coming up with ideas or like, you know, doing some history research. But I don't really do. I mean, I've done interviews and stuff in the past for, you know, work as somebody who's worked in the realm of writing about pop culture for as long as I have. And, you know, interviews happen. But it's always, the doing the interviews and certainly then the transcribing, of course, if it's successful enough or like I had enough of like published behind me, I wanted to do the transcribing part, I suppose. But still, I like to do the part where I am coming with ideas and where I am writing, because that's why I am a writer, because I enjoy the writing and like doing like oral history stuff. You're much more, you're just like a transcriber. You're like the person doing the translation of an opera as opposposed to like being the one who created it. And that's, you know, some people.
AI is going to take that job here any minute anyway.
Well, I will say, so I interviewed 150 people for that book. That was, I won't say a waste of time, but stressful as fuck. Fortunately, my publisher was like, oh, so there's this AI transcription thing you can try. I won't advertise it on here until they decide they want to become a sponsor, but it worked really well. It worked very well. So I didn't have to do a lick of it, and I didn't have to pay for it either. It's because it's kind of expensive, but it worked out. I only had to tweak a few things here and there, and obviously, you know, make sure it all was punctuated properly. AI is never going to get the punctuation right, because only I'm going to know the intent of what the person is saying.
Exactly.
So yeah, I did a lot. That was helpful. Now that said, I also like, I love interviews now because I'm just used to it, and it's easier than regular research. I won't say I don't do any, but it's easier as a starting point for me, because I'm like, okay, cool. I can now fact check these people, maybe, sort of, unless they're the only person in the room kind of thing.
Yeah, but still, like, it's, you're not just putting that on paper and saying, you know, here's my book. You're taking what they're saying and using it to drive what you're writing. And that's, you know, that takes much more effort and brain power.
I sent out a query letter to an agent yesterday, and in one of the, in the form, I've never seen this in the form before. It was like, was AI used in any way and how much? This is not necessarily, you know, this doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be rejected. And I was quite honest about how I felt about that potential usage in somebody writing a fucking book they're pitching. And
I've seen that a little bit recently.
Yeah.
Because I'm getting my stuff together for writing, you know, put together my next book project. And so I was doing some like preliminary stuff. And yeah, that's a thing I was seeing as well. It's just, I guess, a question that's just sort of now the de rigueur, you know, part of the process is to be like, so yeah, how much AI, if any, was used? And it's like, I'd never, you know, conceived of that sort of like, of doing that. But obviously, yeah, people are doing that. And it's, you know, tantamount to plagiarism. So it's also part of the problem, because AI is, you know, gleaning information from other sources and in many cases just spewing it back out. And, you know, that's just sort of like a puzzle of like, it's like plagiarism Mad Libs. Like maybe you can't piece it all together. Like, you know, like it's not like stolen like in like whole cloth, but it's definitely like, you know, piecing together like text taken directly from like sources of other people's writing. So it definitely is quite thorny logistically.
Yeah, people are thinking that AI is just coming up with all this. It's just a very advanced large language model.
Yeah.
Right? It's the same shit that I did to generate those weird titles for our things, only fancier.
Yeah, years ago, on this podcast, we basically, I'm going to say this, Dan, we basically invented AI. And, but yeah, we used other people's AI stuff. We're like, oh, cool, it can draw from a model of text, and we would only use our own banks of text. Like, our next comedy album, which I have been working on now for 6 years, is will come out
of quality stuff. That's why it takes a lot of work.
Exactly right. That must be it. That must be it. But we decided we're gonna give that an AI title based on titles. What was it? All of our sketches, like hundreds
of
sketches.
All of our sketches. You, because he has them all cataloged off of the 50-some VHSs that we have.
And it came up with complete fucking nonsense. And so that's what we're naming it. And since then, obviously, AI has changed. And since the album's not done, and since I wanted to link all the sketches, I won't give anything away, but let's just say AI is not involved in the actual writing of it, but
plays a part in the plot.
Yes, exactly. There we go. Thank you. So AI has become part of the plot of the record, which again, it's a sketch comedy record, but yes, there's a plot and a through line, which, you'll see, guys, or hear.
It's the Pink Floyd of comedy albums.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Right. Did you hear about, like, cause it was a while ago. When was this?
Did you hear about this?
August of 2023, a court finding about copyright of AI stuff.
No, I did not.
There's three takeaways from this court decision.
Oh, God. Okay.
And I imagine at some point it's going to end up at the Supreme Court. But one, human authorship is a bedrock requirement of copyright. Mm-hmm. Works generated by AI without sufficient human contribution do not meet the human authorship requirement and thus are not currently copyrightable under U.S. copyright law. I feel like that's the most important part.
Yes.
So if you create a book purely from AI, you cannot copyright that book.
Good.
That would be public domain.
And people have.
Companies relying upon Gen AI tools to create content such as software code or other works of expression must be aware that, absent a sufficient degree of human involvement, content will not be protected by copyright and not owned by the company simply because it owns the underlying AI tool or has agreements in place to assign any outputs to the company. So if you basically use AI to help you build your program and it does the heavy lifting, your program is also not protected.
That's something.
The level of human involvement necessary to meet the human authorship requirement will be subject to ongoing debate and dispute, so stakeholders should closely monitor developments in this area to inform their strategy as to content generation, IP protection, and enforcement strategy. The Copyright Office's recent notice of inquiry and request for comments will shed further light on this, blah, blah, blah. So in other words, what does human involvement mean? So it's basically, if you're doing that shit, you are rolling some fucking dice, bud.
Yeah, for real. Holy shit.
But I know there was something. Someone made a bunch of art using AI. And then what happened? Did someone try to reuse it? And then they tried to sue them. And then the court's like, nah, the AI doesn't belong to you. It belongs to the computer.
Yeah, for
real. Something like that. It was something along those lines. Like, they're trying to say someone stole their art, but their whole exhibition was about AI creating art.
That's really funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like when the Terminator he was touring around doing his Type 5, and then somebody stole the Terminator's jokes, and it's like, hey, you stole my routine. It's like, hey, man, you're a robot guy from the future. Like, you don't own your material. I can use it. Also, they're all just street jokes anyways. Terminator did a lot of street jokes, you know. And so, you know, and sure, you know, time, you know, reflection, some of it wasn't appropriate, but
sure,
you know,
T-700s walk like this. Did you ever notice?
Yeah. And he just stomps his foot down on a skull.
Have you heard about this? Have you seen this in the papers?
Yeah. Didn't do any Polish jokes, though, because Poland no longer existed in
of course.
Yeah, he didn't really. His stuff wasn't really very well received.
No, of course. Dan, I want to do a little something we haven't done in a bit. We have not done This Day in Dan and Jay for a while, which covers, Chris, for you, since I'm certain you've heard exactly zero episodes of this podcast, let me catch you up. We occasionally delve into the history of our sketch comedy group, which sometimes through time travel we discover goes back further than we knew. We knew it went back to our grandfathers, great-grandfathers, things like that. But we've since discovered that other people have come onto the show, through people coming onto the show, that it goes
since,
back
what,
even
the
1500s
further.
A couple episodes ago, somebody made it so that ancient Greece was as far back as it goes. And by somebody, I mean those people from ancient Greece, of course. I don't mean anything
else
by that.
Right, exactly.
That doesn't in any way make things difficult. Yeah. In
ancient Greece, the precursor to Greece 2.
Yes, exactly. Thank you very much. All right. Well, sure. Guest has the best callback in the history of the show. Great. Wonderful. Oh, speaking of which, real quick, beer sponsor. I'm drinking Smithwick's Red Ale. Darker than I had anticipated. Love it so much. Irish, delicious, red, and full-bodied. Dan, I just, by the way, what you couldn't see, because you can't see anything, is I just tried to cup the bottom of this mug like it was, I guess, balls. And I didn't mean to do it, but that's what I did. I cupped the balls of this cup.
Gave the balls a little scruffle?
Just a little. Delicious. Dan, what are you drinking?
Starbucks Double Shot. Ooh. I know we're supposed to be boycotting, but it's literally the only caffeine that works for me.
Okay. Fair enough.
We never mentioned last week.
Yep.
So last week I had this thing that's a Monaco cocktail.
Okay. It looks scary
Tropic
to me.
Tropic Rush. It's a mixed drink made with vodka, natural flavor, and caramel color.
Okay.
It was very good.
Okay. It looks frightening, but sounds good. Chris, what do you have? I believe you mentioned it in your email to me.
Yes. I don't know or recall off the top of my head the name of the vineyard or what have you, but it's a... Pinot Noir from California is somewhere in, I believe, American Canyon. I got it through a wine subscription service sort of thing. So I did, you know, the bottle was sort of sent to me. It's a little light in color for Pinot Noir, but it's a 2020 vintage. It's got a very cherry forward taste. It's got a nice tartness to it. I opened it yesterday to have a drink after I went to go see Akabuki Beaver and Boys and Girls Drinking Choir, a Japanese and Korean punk band, respectively, at St. Andrews Hall down in Detroit. Amazing. And, you know, as one does after seeing Japanese punk, you open up a nice bottle of Pinot Noir.
Of course.
And so I had that left, you know, to so, yeah, it's a nice, it's solid for, you know, a bottle sort of given to me pretty much randomly because it was... a subsection of usually the prescription service is like, give us your tasting notes and the flavors you like, and we'll send bottles according to that. This was a deal where it's like, we've got these, like, you know, offers available. You don't choose the wine, take it or leave it, dude. And I'm like, fine, you know, send me the bottles that you're trying to get rid of or whatever. Like,
oh, so it's like the wine equivalent of that, like, ugly vegetable thing.
I mean, it could have, yeah, it's, you know. I don't know if it's quite to that same degree of, like, you know, just like whatever loss leader situation or circumstance they had. It was like they made it, you know, cheaper by dint of you not choosing the wine. So I'm imagining they weren't, you know, the upper echelon options to be had. But and certainly based on the appellations of these wines and the sort of the fact that most of them are blends. This is one of the handful of non-blends in the mix. That, you know, it's not their best offering, but it's solid as far as Pinot Noir goes. And I still don't remember what the name of the, you know, vineyard or the brand is. So they're not getting any plug because, you know, it's just like the idea to the very idea of a 2020 California Pinot Noir. That's what it is. It's the very concept of.
That's good.
I had a blend once and it was disgusting. I believe it was like Spit Bouquet or something like that.
There's
Spit? Like spit?
Oh, maybe. Maybe it was.
Oh, okay. Was it a spit bucket?
It wasn't a big tin.
Yeah, damn.
And they weren't
sorry.
Yelling at me to stop.
You're not supposed to do that.
Yeah.
But it was a blend.
Yeah.
And a lot of people were chewing tobacco. And...
this is, I'm getting chunks.
It's funny because there are spit aftertaste. Yeah.
There are wines that will say they have the taste of tobacco in the mix. So it's kind of, you know, maybe that's how the sausage is made, as they say.
So here's what, Dan, I propose we do. Instead this time of giving us a date and having you read off something in our timeline, which you can see at history.danaj.com, riddled with typos, deal with it. Go ahead, check that out.
Yeah, our intern's not great at that
stuff. Our intern is not great. Yeah. Thanks a lot, Bippy, which is what I call him. I call him Bippy. I don't know what his real name is.
We've
which
had
is
four
why.
Interns. He calls every single one Bippy.
I call them all Bippy. What are you going to do? This time I'm going to screen share a photo of somebody from our group's history. This looks like it's around the 1870s, if I'm not mistaken, 1860s. I don't know, whatever. I'm going to show it to you, Dan. And because you're not 100% an expert, but you know who a lot of these people are. I just would like you to, tell the people at home who you're looking at and a little bit how he falls into the history of Dan and Jay's Comedy Hour. I don't believe he's one of our direct ascendants. Nope, that's the wrong word. Guys. But, you know, I believe he
predecessors?
Has... Predecessors? Sure. I believe he's
ancestors?
Related...
Ancestors? Is that the word you're trying
that's
to find?
That's the word. I believe he is related to the group in that period of time. So I'm going to share this and describe him to the folks at home. And there we go. Can you see it? There we go.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. This guy.
That's Irving Giltschmart.
Yep. Irving Giltschmart. I forgot. Yeah,
he used about this guy. In the 1870s. For a brief period, they were actually a trio.
Oh, okay. Tell me more about this. This is something I don't know all this stuff. So,
well, see, what happened was one day, our guys were drowning in a river,
and Phil Collins was there,
and Irving saw them and decided. In full suit, like you're seeing what he's wearing there, mm-hmm. to jump in and rescue them. And then all three almost drowned, but luckily he found a stick to pull himself on. And then all three were pulled out of the water. And due to the life debt, he joined the group.
Wow.
Except that he did not understand timing.
Okay.
He didn't understand irony.
Oh, boy.
And he just straight up just didn't understand comedy.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a challenging 5 years,
wow.
until he had a mysterious, death. There was a towel hanging out of his throat and they think that maybe it had something to do with, like, you know, he was eating and the towel, he had his food on a towel and just kept going.
Wow, that's upsetting. That's one of the first deaths I think that we've talked about in the history of our group.
It does, you know, in the 1870s that happened a lot, and mm-hmm. Unfortunately it happened to Irving Giltschmart.
Yeah, I believe now, I mean, I don't have the same sort of knowledge of your ancestors or what have you, but I believe many years later Mel Brooks and Buck Henry would of course create the show Giltschmart about him and his life there. Mm-hmm. But, yeah. I mean, I do know TV history, so I know
sure.
a little
he's
bit.
Got, he's got a background on that one.
That makes sense. You know, they updated it, of course, to modernize it, and it changed it a little bit. But yeah, Irving Giltschmart. Dan, thank you so much. You've really... Yeah. Added to the canon of this show and
sure
our group's
have.
History. Again, not added to. You've just elucidated something that has since been hidden roughly in the archives.
Added to it for the, you know, our mm-hmm. listeners who were mm-hmm. unaware of the history piece
exactly.
there.
Exactly right. This is my favorite part of the show is when that kind of thing happens. And Dan?
Mm-hmm.
This is weird. We're getting a call from an HG, which I can only assume is Irving Giltschmart. Legally, I have to answer it.
That's just how this show works.
I don't have, in Animal Crossing, I don't have a time box to answer. I don't have a Zoom or anything. I should have put the PC in the room with him, but, I will be playing the part of me answering the, hello, Irving Giltschmart.
Yes, this is Irving Giltschmart.
Oh, Irving, is the towel down your throat right now?
No, what? I don't understand what you're saying. This is just...
That's just how you talk.
Are you being offensive right now?
I don't think I've ever been offensive, no. Oh, you don't... Oh, I forgot. You don't understand irony. Is that correct? Or do you not know?
What do you mean?
Okay. That's too long of a discussion. Well, you know what? I have a pop culture historian. Maybe he can elucidate a bit about irony. Chris, do you dare try and explain this to him?
Sure. Yeah, a little bit about, you know, trying to explain... irony to Monsieur Giltschmart, who I was, yes. you know, a fan
I'm
of the
not
show.
French, just so you know, in case you were confused. I don't speak French.
Enough. Oh, what is your origin then? Is it Dutch in nature with a name like Giltschmart?
I am a cold-blooded American.
Don't people say they're red-blooded Americans? What makes one cold-blooded? Is it an American? What is the cold-bloodedness of it all?
I like to sit on rocks and sun myself, so I presume, much like the lizard, I am cold-blooded.
Great. I mean,
I don't care what those doctors say in this science of the day.
Oh, no.
No, you're able to talk to us. Giltschmart, I know you are did the bulk of your work and living and dying in the 1800s. Are you familiar with the cultural figure of Richard Nixon?
What do you mean? I live a long, healthy life.
Let's pretend that's the case. Just Chris, just
okay,
just,
absolutely. Yeah, just, yeah. So in that case, are you familiar with a future president and a laughing cameo haver, Richard Nixon? Because you kind of sound like Richard Nixon.
You really do.
I've not heard of this man.
Can you say it to me really quickly? I am not a crook.
I'm not a crook.
Okay, fair enough. So irony is sort of like now you're back there in your olden times or what have you.
This is modern.
Okay, yeah. So you're gonna say picture this Senor Gilchmart.
You're... I'm also not Spanish.
All right, Herr Gilchmart, you're...
I am a cold-blooded American, sir. Please call me Mister.
Okay.
Or Doctor.
Doctor.
Wait, are you a doctor?
Honorary, yes.
Okay. Oh, they had those back then, or now. Is it from Temple University?
Compatriots, they...
Is your honorary doctorate by any chance from Temple University?
What now? No, the Gremlinstein and the Klammenstein here. They said, you know, I'm so damn smart, I must be a doctor.
Great.
So I assume that they must have awarded me some sort of honorable mention.
You don't think they were taking the piss out of you?
I'd really rather they didn't. I will provide it if you really need some.
Now that's sort of literalization. Are you familiar with Drax the Destroyer from the Guardians of the Galaxy?
Now he doesn't know Nixon.
But what? No.
That's true. You might know. Do you know what's that guy's name? Jim Starge? I don't remember the name of the guy who created all the Guardians of the Galaxy. That's too far afield. I've got to get back to explaining irony.
Yeah,
here.
I don't. So. I'm kind of lost here, sir.
All right, so. You're on a rock, but you're not in Iraq, a country in the Middle East that maybe had a different name at the time. We've come unstuck in time, I'm going to assume here. We're on our Billy Pilgrim vibes, Bill Pilgrim grab vibes right now, stuck in time. I'll stop mentioning time because it's only complicating matters.
I'm very confused about everything that's going on right now.
So you're on a rock. You're like, you know, you're... sunning yourself or what have you. Somebody strolls by, handlebar mustache, top hat, woman with a gusset or a corset or what have you. And they say unto you, like, you know, hey, what are you doing there? And you say, I'm frying eggs for lunch or that's something like that. And you're not doing it like literally or something like that. That's not quite good irony.
Why would I say that if I'm not frying eggs? I don't understand.
Okay.
I'd probably say I'm standing here, miss. What do you want?
You wouldn't say anything that was not factually accurate ever. You only speak in factual accuracy, statement-wise.
I mean, I might lie occasionally, but I don't understand why that's here nor there.
Well, a lie is not unlike an irony if you're lying for the sake of humor.
Fair-ish,
in a way, it's not quite a perfect one for one, but maybe it's the best way for you to understand this is if you lied not to gain something for yourself or for the erotic thrill of it all, but for the sake of humor. That's kind of what irony is. It's like lying to be funny.
I don't get what is humor.
That's right. No. That's also one of the key facts in that statement, that humor. Well, let's say there's a certain kind of ice cream truck that's called the Good Humor. And it's sort of like, if you imagine, I'm sure.
What is this truck?
Oh boy.
I feel like, are you familiar with the idea of yes and the opposite of that? Because it's sort of like.
I've said yes and before.
Oh, okay. There's some sense of humor available for that. It's just, there's a lot of things that exist in this world that I'm familiar with, and it seems like all of them you're not familiar with. So it makes conversation kind of tricky. It's kind of like a Wittgenstein philosopher once said that if lions could talk, humans could not have a conversation with them because our frames of reference are so different.
Sure. And
I feel like I'm
also
talking
their muscles
to...
make it very difficult to understand what they're saying.
Do you have a dog named Checkers by any chance?
I do not.
All right, it's worth a shot.
I don't understand owning animals.
Oh, that's, I guess, I mean, that's apparently a fact about you. Don't know if it ties into anything we've been talking about previously. I guess it's just a new fact. You're working to know each other. We can exchange, you know, new ideas about one another.
That's how friendship forms, sir.
That is, yeah, we're developing the same
thing. I read about that once.
I'm curious,
yes.
Herving.
Why do you look so weird? Why do you have a ball head?
I'm sorry. What you're seeing, this is going to be too long to explain, but it's a pastime that I enjoy now, begrudgingly.
Much like how I hunt foxes.
Sure, this is my fox hunting. What you're seeing is the result of my fox. This is like a fox corpse, but it's replicated. So only this is boy, you're a challenge. I'm curious. Yes. How far are you into your tenure with the sketch group is called at that moment in history that you're in? How long have you been with the Dan and the Jay gentlemen at that period of time?
Oh, it's been about 4 years now.
Okay. Do you have can you explain to me what you yes. think you're doing when you perform a sketch on stage with these gentlemen?
Why, we're having a conversation, and they have some very weird events in their life.
Okay. Okay. And do you read the scripts in advance, or are you just participating?
What's the script? I guess I've heard of that in, like, what is that, like a thing called a play? I don't get that.
Yep.
But no, I mean, we just go on stage, and they say, hey, we're going to talk, and then I talk to them.
Okay. So they're not even providing you with... Have they tried to provide you with papers beforehand, words to say in advance to memorize, perhaps? Has that been attempted and maybe failed?
I've read some things. Okay. They've written their stories down before.
Yes.
And
you don't... do you have any interest in repeating those stories for the sake of the audience?
No, they're not my stories. So.
Okay. Right. Okay. I mean... Boy, it's hard to argue with somebody like you.
Thank you.
Yeah. So what I'm understanding is, Chris, tell me if I'm wrong, sounds like they're doing a sketch and letting him improvise in the midst of the sketch. Do they ever change what they say, Herving? Or do they say the same things every night and you say, my, but that's strange?
I mean, it's their stories, so I don't know why they wouldn't remember them.
Uh-huh. Sure. And you participate, though, somehow.
No, I mean, we have a conversation.
Okay.
I mean, people enjoy listening to me talk. I've got a very soothing voice.
Yeah. It seems to me it's kind of like there's that improv game where it's like two people are improvising and one person is just reading like a script.
Yeah,
But this is like two people doing that and one person improvising, but they don't understand what improv is.
Right.
So what I'm saying is it sounds like it was really good.
What's improv?
Oh, God.
Well... See, there's this guy, Robin Williams, and basically what it is you do a lot of offensive accents, but you do them all really fast.
Yeah.
And, you know, that qualifies as a joke, and eventually you get your own sitcom, and you bring Jonathan Winters on, and cocaine's involved. Now, do you know anything about cocaine?
I'll bet he does.
Oh, it's one of the best medicines, from my understanding.
Yeah, at the time, I'm sure that's absolutely true. Do you partake?
When I have a cold,
okay,
I will take a lozenge.
Cocaine lozenge.
That's very interesting. Do you have one on you now? I'd be curious to see how you sound when you've do you have. Oh, here. Hold on.
I am very healthy right now.
Okay, fine. Let's say, have you ever taken one before going on stage? I guess is my question.
There have been times where my voice was a bit rough, and so I took a lozenge, yes.
How did that change the tenor of the program that night?
I wish I could tell you, but, you know, I got very congested and just sort of everything's a blur.
I'll be honest. You, Chris, just go with me on this. You sound a bit rough right now, a little rough around the edges. If you took one now, I will give you the moment to take one so that you sound and feel better, and then we can see what happens.
What do you mean? I feel like I found a bite of leather.
God damn it. This is impossible. Dan, do you want to try and convince this guy to do some cocaine on...
Hey, dude, take some cocaine. It just sounds like something that, you know, we don't have any of those here, and we're just curious.
All right, you can't talk around stuff with this guy.
Okay, sure.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. Okay. So you get Drax to do cocaine.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, so now my throat's, it's got that tingle, you know.
Sure.
The lozenge tingle that everyone gets, and everyone loves it. Everyone loves cocaine. How are you guys doing today?
We're doing great.
Wow.
It really veers into that Robin Williams quasi gay character voice.
Do you want me to do some of my voices?
Oh, God. Do I?
Are any of them in Jamaica?
Probably not for our own sanity.
What about? Can you do a New York accent? Give me what's a New York accent?
Oh, what you doing? What you doing? I don't know. I am a walking here. Oh,
that's basically what I do for a New York accent too. So you know what? Pretty accurate. Not
whatever
bad.
They talk like in the 1870. I think there's some immigrants.
Yep, fair. Yep, that sounds good. What do you? Boy, you have any? Do you have any opinions on immigrants? Well. Maybe we don't go there. wow, Herving, I really appreciate you being with us this evening or whatever time it is for you back in 18.
Thanks, I like it.
Do you have anything you'd like to promote before we let you go?
Watch the commercial thing, and I'm not Bob Cagle-Thwaite. Bye.
Oh boy, he turned into Bobcat Goldthwait at the end.
I don't know.
That's what cocaine does, kids. So
if he hung out any longer, he would have set somebody's couch on fire
and been banned from the show. I will not allow that to come back. Wow, Herving Kilchmart. Boy, that is Chris. I got to tell you, you're lucky to have been joined. Thank you, by the way. I'll be honest.
To, see a piece of history there.
You really did, and honestly, you were the best person to explain irony to him. I would have stumbled because I get stressed out with people who don't understand nuance. So thank you.
You know, I mean, I think that had he lived long enough, he would have really fit in on, you know, Rona Martin's laugh, and he could have presaged Richard Nixon. He could have been like, Richard Nixon could only show up one time.
Sure.
But Herving Kilchmart could have been on there week in and week out right next to Lily Tomlin doing that little girl character that's not really a character, but just her in a giant chair. Or
he'd be like, why are you putting on that dress?
He would have, you know, hung out next to Goldie Hawn, you know, sock. People would have had it socked to them. You know, Artie Johnson and the rest. Was Ruth Buzzy on that show? I think so.
Yes, indeed.
His mom on Saved by the Bell, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think if they kept him away far enough that he would actually have believed the Muppets were real?
Oh, maybe. We'll have to get him on at some point. He kind of looks like a Muppet. You know?
Yeah.
We'll have to bring him back. Yeah. Maybe when we get
either
the Puppets.
Either Statler or Waldorf.
Yeah.
Or maybe both combined.
Yeah.
You're right.
Ooh. So I'm annoyed because my camera has not, again, I've possibly bricked it, but my camera has not, and by that I mean shit myself. It is possibly not going to update, obviously, before the end of this. So I'm going to share my screen to show you, something. It's been a while. We haven't done this in a while. Chris, you're not going to know about this because if you did visit an episode of any kind, it would not have involved this. Dan and I used to do a little web series and an occasional segment on this show called Food Holes with Dan and Jay, where we would eat something unusual.
Oh, shit. I never sent you your crickets.
Oh, well, no, I think you did, but because they're animal based, I didn't eat them. But here, I'm going to share you my screen to show you what I found today at the dollar store. And I don't know what I think of this. That's what I found. These are Kit Kat chocolate frosted donut flavor. What can that possibly taste like other than just more chocolate?
It says on the package, crisp wafers in donut flavored milk chocolate and cream, but cream spelled like creme.
Uh-huh.
Donut flavored milk chocolate.
Yeah.
That's really, because obviously.
That's the thing. Like, how do you make the flavor of a donut without actually just having some form of.
Yeah.
Of donut.
Yeah.
Or pastry in there? Because it's not the wafers that are donut flavored.
No. Yeah.
So people have come to accept the idea of the flavor of birthday cake. Are we now trying to make donut a flavor in the same way birthday cake is? And
okay.
In which case?
Here's the weird thing, Chris. The second you said that, it smells like birthday cake.
Are you saying that maybe it's just it's the birthday cake flavor, but they're using, Inception.
Yeah.
To make you believe it's donut.
I'm going to say this. A, we all know that I am incredibly suggestible. That is that is a thing. If I see a Coca-Cola commercial, I start to
drool. I
believe
you're the reason why we came up with the term suscepted.
Yes. Yes. It's very easy for me. But, it smells so sweet. It smells like a Krispy Kreme, but it also, again, Chris put it in my head, it smells like birthday cake flavor. It's partially because of the white chocolate. White chocolate's going to impart its own thing to this. Mm-hmm. So we're just going to, I don't like to eat on mic, so I'll do my best not to, but I will report on the flavor briefly. Hold on. It just tastes like birthday cake with a little bit of chocolate on it. It's fine. It's not as good as a real Kit Kat. Mm. I like a good Japanese Kit Kat with like a fun flavor to it.
Yeah.
This... No, thank you. I mean, it's whatever. It's like, it's not bad, but it's exactly what I assumed.
I don't have it on me right now. I ate it earlier, but I ate something for the first time today. I have the package. I can look and see the exact, see here.
Mm-hmm.
They were veggie straws, but they were screaming hot flavored.
Uh-huh.
And so I said, it's going to be super spicy. Because I bought a couple of like spicy things when I was out. I had to buy a new thing of hand sanitizer because I went to St. Andrew's Hall to see Odoboki Beaver and drinking Boys and Girls Choir. They made me throw out my hand sanitizer. They would not let me bring it into the St. Andrew's Hall. That was considered contraband, so I had to go buy some more hand sanitizer because it's 2024, and I was the hand sanitizer carrier even pre the rise of the pandemic and a novel virus in the corona family. And so I bought a couple of snack things as well. So basically, if you're looking for spice, don't believe the hype of the packaging of screaming hot veggie straws. It was very much like in that one Simpsons episode where Ned Flanders is talking about he's got the 5-alarm chili and Homer says it's like 2.5 tops or whatever. Mm-hmm. It was that sort of thing. Not really spicy like at all. Now, I've got a high spice and like heat threshold.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe if like you are like a mild Thai food eater, you'll get something from it. But I'm like a medium plus hot Thai food eater.
Okay.
And to me, they had a bit of flavoring and like minor heat, but they mostly just taste like veggie straws with like a slight kick of heat. So if you're seeking out spice, even if you love veggie straws, I say, look elsewhere. They're not delivering, they're not hot, much less screaming hot.
That's funny. There's
your review, guys.
That's a good review. I am bad with spice, but I do like a very hot, like a chip or like a Cheeto.
You used to eat hot fries.
I love hot fries. They are delicious.
And so did the seagulls.
Yeah. Well, it was turns out.
Oh, the ducks.
Maybe not the best thing we could have done for those ducks, but we, as in our 20s, thought that was very fun because they loved them.
Learned that birds can't taste capsaicin, so.
Oh, okay. Well, at least there's that. Can they digest potato starch? Like, that's the other question. Hard to say.
That's a different story, yeah.
Boy, I'm having trouble getting over our adventure with Herbie and Giltschmart.
That's fair. It was an experience that was unique.
It absolutely was. Well, look, we've done our episode, even though I have absolutely no fucking webcam, and I'm pretty sure, again, I've bricked it. Let's do this. Let's start here. Chris, if you would.
At least it was only $30 instead of like one of those $120 ones.
It's all right. I'll get them to give me a new one. It's Amazon.
Amazon. Say showed up broken.
Exactly. Chris, I would love for you to please promote your book and anything else you want to promote. And then keep in mind, we're going to come back around the horn to you at the very end to come up with something to leave the audience with. It can be some words of wisdom. It doesn't have to be. You can read something off a package half the time. That's what Dan does. But I just want you to keep that in mind. But please hit us with your promotions.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, first and foremost, 99 episodes that define the 90s, TV milestones from Arsenio, the Homer, yada, yada, yada. my latest book available for pre-order now, wherever, you know, pretty much wherever you can, like, find books, you know, your Amazons and Barnes and Nobles and other sort of places. I got a couple previous books about 90s TV. One is about 90s Nickelodeon. It's called The Nickelodeon 90s. One is about Mystery Science Theater 3000. Awesome. That one's a little out of date. It was written before the show was brought back. So it's a lot of, like, retrospective about a show that then started to exist again. Uh-huh. But, I mean, that's still, like, a good book for, like, looking back at the classic era of the show, mm-hmm. IMO. I like, you know, so, and also I write stuff on the internets and what have you, Yard Barker, and I'm now writing stuff for Movie Maker Magazine, I think is what they're called. I should know the name of the publication I'm writing for, but it is still fairly new. Also, I started a Substack that I am now doing a little bit less with than I initially planned because I've found some new work to do. But it's called, it's called My Substack Could Be Your Life, but it's at chrisxmorgan.substack.com. It's a throwback to the days before everything on the internet needed some sort of hook organizational principle. I think of it as being like, remember when Chuck Klosterman wrote his book Sex, Drugs, and Cocoa Puffs, and the entire organizational principle was that it was a bunch of essays about pop culture? This is a throwback to that era, the Wild West of the blogosphere, and when, you know, the idea of writing about pop culture was in and of itself an interesting sort of thing. So I'm just writing about whatever I feel like over at my Substack. And but yeah, if you're taking a primary takeaway from this, 99 episodes had defined the 90s. If it's still available for pre-order when you hear this, pre-order it. Pre-orders are important for books. You'll hear every author say that now when they go on a podcast, so get used to it. And if you do some pre-ordering of books, then authors will stop saying it so much and you won't have to hear it anymore. I don't like how people don't say, can I swear on this thing on podcasts as much anymore, because people got used to the idea of what you can do and not do on different podcasts. So yeah, hopefully, you know, if you have an interest in 90s television at all, this book probably has something for you. So give it a try.
Love it. Delightful. Dan, what would you like to promote, sir?
Before I do that, I'm going to see who will buy your who will want to buy your book. Joel, Mike, or Jonah?
Mike.
Correct answer. Also, I cannot watch the first two seasons because I cannot stand that the other dude that talks like this all the time. I cannot stand that voice. I can't do it. I've tried.
Yeah,
David Tell's wife sees these. Well, he's technically on only the first season on Comedy Central. He's on season zero of the KTM season as well, but he left after the first season on Comedy Central.
He was only
like, to be fair, he's like 20 at the time.
Yeah.
He was like new to comedy basically. And like even Joel said that, like, you know, and they said like why he left is like suddenly we were professional and we had like a 20-year-old hanging around, you know. And like, you know, now, I mean, obviously things came back around. J. Elvis started to do stuff with like Cinematic Titanic, but like, you know, it's not the best. Those episodes certainly are not the best for sure.
It's hard for me because I also watch it a lot when I go to sleep.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
And that's not
you can't have that
conducive.
Pop in your... Yeah, no, no.
I think it's hilarious. So when he came back in the new season and he just has his regular voice, it was so good.
He knows.
Very much lampshading that. Okay. So I will promote the Meowrathon.
Yes.
April 26th through 28th, raising funds for Simply Cats by playing tabletop role-playing games. So come join us. It'll be on my Twitch as well as my other streaming things. You can find out all the details at meowrathon.com. That's meowrathon.com. You can also see me stream on rare occasions at twitch.tv/DGOMILLER. No, it's my whole username, D.O. Miller. Or you can just find all my links at my link tree at linktr.ee/DGOMI.
Delightful. I'm just going to tell people to go check out We're Not Worthy, which is my book on 1990s TV sketch comedy. I interviewed 150 people, everybody from Carol Burnett to Mike Myers. That's not really much of a range, but some of the other names you might not know. So it'd be weird to be like this unknown person to Carol Burnett. Anyway, I enjoy it. It's a good book, sketchcomedybook.com. You can buy it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. You can buy it in some Barnes & Nobles, depending. But also, go to your local bookstore, your local indie bookstore. Have them order it if they don't already have it.
Yeah. And I almost said that myself. That's another thing that authors are supposed to say.
Yeah.
Order the books, our books, at your local indie bookstore. Mm-hmm. You can do that as well. I'll say that. And I will say, I interviewed zero people for my book. We have different styles, but, you know, I'm doing like sort of like, obviously for your book, that was a very smart thing to do. And yeah, I mean, I don't need to, you know, I feel like I don't need to plug your book to the people who listen to your podcast, but, you know.
You probably do.
Yeah, well, obviously, yeah, the effort, and like, you know, it's a really... It was like a fascinating decade for sketch comedy.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of interesting stuff to be found. So like if you listen to this podcast and you haven't given that book a shot, I would certainly recommend doing so for the effort put into interviews or otherwise. It's a fascinating decade for popular culture and a fascinating decade for sketch shows. So I will, as a guest, second that recommendation for the book, We're Not Worthy, and also the indie bookstore thing, also for my book, do that. That's what I'm supposed to say as a writer.
Well, thank you. I will take that. And I think I have a Substack. I think it's jasonklom.substack.com, if I'm not mistaken. I don't write there a lot, but if you go to patreon.com/stolendress, you'll see more and more stuff getting posted there by the week. It's not very interesting stuff, but it's stuff. Well, Chris, now that we're officially back to you, if you would, what would you like to leave the audience with?
Well, inspired by the idea of just reading off something, I have with me here one of my Archie digests. This is from the Betty and Veronica World of Betty for Long. So I'm just going to do a random page and see what's going to happen here. Okay, so this is in the middle of a comic, so that's good.
Uh-huh.
Good start. Veronica, she's got cherries on her dress. And she's saying, oh, hi, Daddykins. And her father's saying, oh, what's up? He says, he's golfing, it seems like in his backyard, not much, it's called to find out where you are, exclamation point. And then he says, from the sounds of those birds and dogs, and until you took my advice and went outside instead of going to the mall, the irony here is that she actually is in the mall, she's by a pet store. Mm-hmm. And then the last panel here is him saying over the phone, good for you, I'd hate to have you wandering around a stuffy old mall all day, talk to you later, bye. And Veronica says, gulp, but, and then of course the father's already hung up. And and then later they go to a flea market outside, and that's where it ends. There's no joke here.
Huh.
It's one of those classic Archies that has no joke at the end of it. The thing about these Archie Digests, I buy them because I can get like 10 of them for like less than $30.
Of course.
And I've seen each of these books, about a third of them are good, a mm-hmm. third of them are kind of like interesting or like fun, and a third of them are bad. And there's like about maybe 10% of them literally have no jokes in them, and they don't have anywhere. They're not going anywhere at the end of them. So I guess I would say, if I'm going to give some advice also, if you buy an Archie Digest, be prepared for about 10% of these comics in there to have no jokes and no payoff. But the art style is fun, and some of them are good.
I love it. Dan, what would you like to leave everybody with?
Just don't believe everything you read online.
Uh-huh.
I went and bought a pet online,
mm-hmm.
and it turns out, like, it says pet microchip reader.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
But it's a microchip reader for pets.
Oh, what the fuck?
God damn it.
I'm so sorry, Dan. I'm so sorry to hear that. What I'll leave people with, besides a very quick note to Chris's note earlier about Jim Starlin, who's born and raised in Berkeley, right here, inventor of Thanos. Thanos was birthed in Berkeley. We'll pretend it was the case. I'm going to leave everybody with, do believe everything you read on the internet. I'm a chaos agent. Dan and Jay's Comedy Hour, the podcast, is part of the Stolen Dress Podcast Network. The show is hosted by Dan Gomiller and Jason Klom. The Dan and Jay's Community Service theme song was composed and performed by Brian Magic Hands Madison. The Silver Jubilee theme song was composed and performed by Nick Robes, with lyrics by Jason Klom. Have questions? Call and leave us a voicemail at our phone number, 747-248-6687. That's RIP2Humor with a U. Subscribe to Dan and Jay's Comedy Hour on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever else you can find us. Give us a 5-star rating and write us a review. It helps. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at DJC Hour and Instagram at Dan and Jay Comedy. Or find everything in one place at danandjay.com. Visit stolendress.com to listen to our other podcasts, watch videos, and imbibe freely of our multimedia content going back 15 plus years.
Goodbye, Dan and Jay's Comedy Hour.
Stolen Dress Entertainment.
Hey, it's my turn. Ah!